This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts.
Friday night before Christmas, taking into the weekend, big football night, big football weekend. Great chat with Frank Cusumano in the last hour. I'm hoping nothing against the Notre Dame fans in the audience, but man, I hope the Hoosiers can do it tonight. That would be so awesome. In solidarity with my friend Alex Rich from Y98, because he is an IU guy. Tim Summers is going to come up here a little bit later this hour and talk music, some of the big music stories of the year, and some other stuff. I always love chatting with him. He, of course, is a great rock and roll journalist, former record executive. He also was in a band in the 80s. This is interesting. I remember the name of this band, Hugo Largo. I don't remember the music, and I pulled some of the music today, but it was interesting because Tim, very subtly, sent the link to me. The New York Times kind of put together a list of the best box sets. And the Hugo Largo, his band that he was in, it was a weird band too because they didn't have a guitar player, I don't think. It was like two bass players and a drummer, and I might be getting some of this wrong. He'll correct me on all of it, but he's coming up here a little bit later this hour, plus an audio cut of the day. Now, the news story that just happened is the House passed the CR, the spending bill, and there's not going to be a government shutdown. Mike Johnson, the Speaker, is supposed to have some comments about that, and we'll get those to you as soon as we can. But let's talk a little tech here as we head into the weekend with one of our favorite folks on the show, Ian Scheer, CBS News tech expert. I do have some bad news for you this afternoon. You're stuck with me, Ian. Sue is off, unfortunately. I know you love Sue. Everyone loves Sue, and I don't blame you, but she deserved a little time off, so she's back on Monday. How are you?
I'll live.
How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. You know, it's I'm actually right outside D.C., as you know. So we had a little bit of snow earlier today, but I think all the hot air on Capitol Hill pushed it away.
Oh,
so now
I can see that. I can see that for sure. So I have my little troublemaking daughter in the studio with me. She's almost 10 years old, but I bring her up because she had, and this was ill-advised, and I was not a part of this process. She had a sleepover. I don't know if you've ever done any of these with your kids, but she had three girls that slept over on Saturday night, and they woke me up very, very early on Sunday morning, and I'm sitting there, and the girls are up downstairs, my wife's sleeping, and I get on my iPad, and I start doing some tutorials on the new AI stuff with the iPhone, because I have a new 16 Pro, and I always feel like I underuse the technology, right?
Yeah.
But in this case, I sat there and I tried to learn as much about it as I could, and I think I learned a little, but there's some options now with this new iOS that you didn't have before, correct?
It depends on which phone you have, but yes.
Yeah, no, it does. You're right. But I have the 16, so it does work with that.
You have the 16, yeah. So you definitely do, yes. So if you have an iPhone 15 Pro or above, right, so last year's $1,000 iPhone or more, or this year's, what you're able to do is that you have, you know, they announced all this Apple Intelligence AI stuff earlier this year. And it came out and, you know, it does stuff like it helps you to summarize text messages and email threads. And it works kind of okay. There's been a lot of interesting experiences people have gone through with them. One of my favorites that went around the internet was someone had their significant other break up with them over text. And so the summarized was literally broken up, comma, coming to get my things. And it was like, okay, you know, that's very, that works, I guess. But then there was one of the new things that it's doing is that it's working with ChatGPT, which, of course, is OpenAI's very popular AI technology where you can essentially ask it questions and it will do stuff like, for example, help you to write a poem or help you to be able to come up. I mean, I love to do limericks and all sorts of stuff. It's just my little thing. But even, you know, if you're trying to come up with a recipe or whatever else. And so it's interesting that Apple's doing this. You know, their partnerships with startups are pretty well known. Clearly, they are trying to make this thing competitive with what Google is doing. But yeah, it's interesting.
So what would you like? I don't really know how to use the AI still. I mean, I've figured out some of the other functions with the new iOS that aren't necessarily related to, you know, AI. And there's some fun things that you can do that you couldn't do before. And I love the camera, by the way. The camera is amazing, and the slow-mo and, you know, the cinematic mode. So some of that stuff is really, really good with the new phone. But on the AI stuff, what would you recommend to people that don't know what the hell they're doing? They have the new iOS. They have a phone that would help them do some of this stuff. I see the commercials, and the commercials make it look like you should be having a conversation with your phone because you don't have any friends or something like that. But what's a way to kind of enter the AI world and just take baby steps, Ian? Do you have recommendations there?
Yeah. And I mean, obviously, because you have a lot of friends, Mark, you don't have to deal with that. But
yeah.
I think the thing is that for most people, I think the place to start is actually by having it help you to write emails and text messages.
Yeah.
It's actually really fun. What you do is that you start writing, and, you know, either an email or whatever, and you highlight it. And what it can do is that you can tell it to change the tone of your email. So if you have a boss who's not that great, and you need to send them
worded
text message.
It's funny you should mention that. Yes, yes. Go ahead. Tell me more.
So what you do is you can highlight it, and you can tell it, hey, make this more professional, or make it silly or whatever else. And so for some people, that's really helpful because there's an acknowledgement, I think, on some level that we all struggle to know what to say. And so having it even be able to, you know, if you said to it, I need to write an email where I am really disappointed with the way the day went and I hope tomorrow's better, it can actually just write the email for you. And that's kind of cool. Like that is something that is actually useful. And I know a lot of people who sit there and they don't like having to write out an email, or they don't even want to deal with that type of thing. And, you know, you and me, Mark, we're writers, but not everyone feels that way. And right. So this is really helpful.
Well, would it do this? See, this is where I'm wondering if the AI would help. So, because in my situation, I'm the kind of guy, Ian, that, you know, the little angel and the devil on your shoulder. And the devil says, don't do it. Don't say that. Don't send that email. So can I check with AI and say, should I send this email or is it really stupid? Is it going to get me in more trouble?
Yeah.
Would it prevent me from doing stupid things, I guess, is what I'm saying.
To some degree, yes. with that, you actually, so this is where Apple kind of draws the line and you want to get the ChatGPT app or the Gemini app or Meta's app or whatever, where you actually talk to the AI directly. Apple is trying to kind of split the difference. And instead of having a conversation with the AI, you kind of ask it to help you with something.
Right.
And in this, you know, but it's not the same. So I always tell people, especially when you're trying to come up with emails, because honestly, for some reason, ChatGPT and Google's Gemini are great at email. Like that's the one thing they do really well. They don't do a lot of other things great, but they definitely do email really well. Is that you can just fire it up and say, I need to write an email to such and such person who I have all of this backstory with. And you can tell the thing the whole backstory. And then you can say, here's what I need to say. And it will recommend what to write.
Yeah,
and
that's
it's
crazy.
Actually helpful. It you don't want to copy paste. But for, I mean, even there are people I know who are marketers and who are professional writers who they have writer's block, right? We all deal with it. And I tell them, look, I know it sounds silly, but just ask ChatGPT for ideas. Don't copy paste. Don't use it. But ask it for ideas because it'll get your creative juices flowing.
My wife uses it quite a bit, and she's in marketing, and she's been able to put it to use. So I've watched it from, you know, not from afar, but sort of, you know, in my house. But I'm still a little anxious to use some of it. Now, I was at the Apple store yesterday, and I was seeing, and I know that they've had these for a while, but I saw the Apple goggles. Is that something that's more hot this year with what they're doing there?
Well, you know, it's interesting. It really has been a question mark. You know, these things are the $3,500 virtual reality headset, right? That, you know, it puts a screen so close to your face that it makes you feel like you're in a virtual world. But it also has cameras all around the outside, and it shows you a picture of the real world, too. So imagine, I don't recommend you do this, but imagine you could be cooking, and it would literally give you instructions on what to do next as you're cooking, and you're just wearing the goggles, or you're able to walk around outside, and it gives you the map directions as you're walking. And so this is it's an interesting device, but it hasn't caught on the way the iPhone did.
Well, I wonder if the price has anything to do with it, right?
Price could have something to do with it, but it's worth remembering that the iPhone, when it came out, was many hundreds of dollars more than competing phones at the time, right? Most people got a phone for free through their cellular plan. Apple was asking for at least $200, and it was usually even more than that. And so it was still an ask. And I don't know whether Apple's going to be able to make this work, right? The betting against them is never really a great idea, but it's still interesting to see them struggle with this, because generally it feels like whenever Apple does something, it's an automatic hit. And this one, they're still trying to figure it out.
Well, I've told you this before. I'm a big Apple guy, and I allow them the freedom to figure it out, and I do like what they've done so far. So, one of the things that this is little, but if Sue were here, we would highlight it more. I love the fact that they finally figured out this damn thing where people couldn't communicate between, the iPhone and the Androids, and you can send pictures now, because I was unable to send a picture to Sue from my house because I have no cellular service there. I'm only on Wi-Fi, and with Wi-Fi, they prevented you from, sending pictures. So now they figured that out, so that's a lot easier.
But it's still green bubbles.
Yeah,
so
I know.
You're still being finger wagged for not being a blue bubble.
Well, and I'm a blue bubble, so I'm okay with that. Hey, are we going to finally ban TikTok in this country? What's up with that?
You know, it's interesting. The Supreme Court has agreed to hear a case around it. And you may remember, right, when Trump was in office the first time around, he threatened to ban TikTok from the country, and he said it was a national security threat. The government at that time did not explain why it was a national security threat, other than to say that its, headquarters is in the country of China. But otherwise, they didn't say anything. Well, fast forward, the Biden administration says, hey, Congress, if you're willing to write a law, we will actually ban TikTok. And so Congress wrote the law. Biden actually banned it. And by January 19th, the day before Trump gets into office, TikTok is supposed to be banned from the United States. TikTok is fighting that. And they're saying, look, this cannot be allowed under the First Amendment. They say that the First Amendment, we all know it doesn't allow the government to stop our freedom of speech. And they argue that by shutting down one of the most popular social networks in the world, they are keeping Americans from being able to exercise their free speech. And I think it'll be really fascinating to hear what the Supreme Court thinks, right? I mean, this is arguably one of the biggest First Amendment cases that we've seen in a very long time. And whatever the decision is going to have massive impacts.
I'm not a lawyer. I don't play one on the radio. But, the free speech issue related to this is quite fascinating to me. I'm not a TikTok person. I've never had it on my phone. I do have a one TikTok a day policy in my household because my wife and my daughter try to force these things upon me. But, banning it outright, and I know, I have security concerns with this being more of a national security issue with spying. But I can also understand the free speech cases. And you're right. This could be interesting before the court. I don't know. It's such a unique case. We haven't really had things along these lines come before our court. So this could be interesting.
And I think what's really fascinating as well is that I've read the actual documents that TikTok's lawyers have filed with the courts. And the one thing that they bring up that makes it really interesting is they say a lot of the complaints people have about the national security issue, and remember, the government hasn't actually told us, we're just guessing, but a lot of the concerns about tracking and listening in and following what you do and where you are and all that, that's stuff that Facebook and Google and all these other people we know already do.
That's right.
So part of it, they argue, is why are you upset with us when you allow your own countrymen to do it?
Well, there's something to that.
Right. That is the problem, right? Yeah. And so it makes it a really fascinating argument. And look, there is a legitimate national security conversation to be had. I really wish the government would share what they know so we could have that discussion. But in the meantime, it's a First Amendment debate.
on the top, this is outside of our usual conversations, but on the topic of things that the government might not tell us, do you have any opinions on this drone situation?
I am really interested in the fact that it kind of underscores this whole, we don't all know what's going on, right? What fascinates me is that the government isn't being silent about it. There's a lot of local government officials saying, we don't know what's going on. And it's weird, right? It feels weird that there could be something in our airspace and near our family homes that we don't know what's going on. And it seems increasingly like it isn't about UFOs, or even, one congressperson said it might be a carrier from Iran that's off the coast. That doesn't seem to be the case either. It seems to be that it's about, United States Air Force or whatever. But it's still weird that we don't really know. But you know what? When the SR-71 Blackbird showed up for the first time, no one thought an airplane could evade sonar and radar. And guess what? They figured it out. So maybe that's what this is.
I think it's just so bizarre to me, and I don't know what to believe. And, it's hard for me to believe that it's everyone's imagination. Do I think psychologically some people are seeing helicopters when they think it's a drone or a plane? Absolutely. This is going to happen. So I don't think there's as many drones as have been reported, but there is something going on there, and it seems like the explanation is not satisfactory. So I don't know what to think. It's bizarre, though, because the other thing that really kind of comes into play, and this is kind of taking us into a different area where the show explores these issues on a more regular basis, but there's no trust in some of these institutions in the government, so people don't know what to believe, and they don't trust it.
Yeah, and that's exactly, I was going to say that as well, is that the worst part is that we live in a time when we don't trust the government, and the government hasn't really proven in a lot of ways to justify it. Us having trust in it in various different ways, right? Especially when it comes to secret things. And so, yeah, it's really weird. And we may not ever find out what this is, or we may not find out for 50 years when the secrets lapse. But for now, hopefully, it's not bad. That's what I'm hoping.
Yeah, me too, by the way. But then, Phil Murphy, the governor of New Jersey, is out there saying, there's nothing to worry about. I mean, he's the guy that admits that people are seeing things and that it's strange. He's like, it's fine. No, but how do we know that? That's the part that's confusing. Well, listen, Ian, it's always great to catch up and have some great tech conversations. I hope you have awesome Christmas family plans with everybody out there in D.C. I hope you get a little snow for White Christmas, though, or your holiday, because my daughter is begging for snow here in the Midwest, and we don't have it. Probably rain next week. But have a great holiday, Ian. Sure, I'd love to talk to you. You know that. And Sue's going to be mad that she missed you.
I'm sad I missed her, too. But you have a great holiday as well.
All right. Take care, Ian. Oh, Charlie Sexton with this one. Hey, Fred, I got to tell you something here before we get Tim Summer on. So this is terrible. I lost control of the studio. Alexa comes over here. She's been here all day. And she says, where's the mouse for this computer? There's a couple of computers, and there's one over there.
Oh, no.
And that one over there has got the comments from the audience on the YouTube stream. And she claims that I said that she could comment. And she just starts typing out messages to the audience. She's checking in with people saying, hi, Alexa,
she's
here.
Chatting.
Merry Christmas. Oh, yeah. She's
with our
chatting
listeners?
Live on the YouTube stream right now. And I had no idea she was doing it.
I asked this earlier, Mark. When you go to Greece next year,
yes,
is Alexa going with you?
No.
Can she fill in for you
yes.
while you're gone?
Yeah, I think she can. I think she'll do a good job. Speaking of Tim Summer, our favorite music journalist, former record executive, and contributor to the Rock and Roll Globe website. How are you, Tim?
Oh, what a pleasure. And happy, happy Christmas to you and your family. And Does poor Sue know she's lost her job to Alexa?
Well, hopefully not. Sue's going to be mad that she missed Alexa, because they do have a good time together. And I thought, listen, she had off school today, so I thought we'd drag her in here.
What a pleasure listening to Alexa. And she's got good taste, and she's great radio skills.
I know. She used to be really, really shy. But let's talk a little music here as we take people into the weekend.
First of all, the songs you've been playing have been amazing. You just played Charlie Sexton. Now, Charlie Sexton, who I think is right now out on the road as Elvis Costello's guitar player, was Bob Dylan's guitar player for a very long time. And if you've ever seen Charlie Sexton perform live, That is a treat.
It was not an accident that I picked that song for our segment because I have seen Charlie with Bob Dylan. I've seen Bob a couple of times, and he is an awesome guitarist. I didn't know he was out with Elvis. They just announced a new tour with Elvis, I think the Factory here in St. Louis, and it's a little different type of tour. He's going back, I think, to some more obscure songs, if I understood correctly. I don't know.
I did hear about that, yes.
Yeah. I saw Elvis several years ago, maybe 10 years ago, when it was here at the Pageant, a great venue, and it was just Elvis, not a band, and he was doing some storytelling. There was some video. I had no idea. His dad was a huge, huge star in the early 60s in England, in London.
That's right, yeah, a big band star, band leader.
Yeah, like for a variety show or something like that, too.
Yeah.
And boy, if you could have seen the video of, you know, his father and what Elvis looks like, man, no mistaking those two. So one of the questions that we had was, what are the biggest music stories of the year? I have some thoughts on that, and I know you have some thoughts on that. We can go over some of our stuff.
I'm going to throw three at you.
Okay.
And again, this is, we're talking personal opinion here. This is all, you know, I was going to say objective, but for the life of me, despite the fact that I write for a living, Mark, I always get objective and subjective mixed up.
I can empathize with that, yeah.
So let's just say it's my opinion. So I'm going to give you three stories. The first is Taylor Swift. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. We grew up, and I mean specifically you and I, Mark, we grew up in an era where we were made to believe that no one could ever possibly be as big or be as important to young people as the Beatles were to us. Yet here comes Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift turns an entire generation of young women, young girls, into music fans for life. She makes them listen to her music, and I mean listen, not just dispose of it, not just listen to 30 seconds on Spotify, but really study the music and be absorbed by the music. And she does the first $1 billion tour in history. So I think when you look at the biggest stories of the year, Taylor Swift and the fact that I think she really did the impossible. She finally came along and did something as big as the Beatles. So that's my number one.
And I think it's an appropriate number one. And I must say, I think because I pay a lot of attention to music outside of my children, I already have. Will I be lying if I would say that my daughter didn't have some influence there? Of course, because I've been exposed to more of the music. But I'm a fan. I really am. I like a lot of the music. I'm a fan of hers. I would stay outside of the political arena in most musical artists, including Mr. Springsteen. But I think she's fantastic as an entertainer, and I'm very much look forward to see how it evolves from here because she's got lots of, you know, lots of opportunities, I think, in the future.
And as I said, I think one of the greatest things she does is she created a generation, a new generation of people who cared about records, who cared about music, who cared about lyrics, who followed, oh, this is what a bass player does, this is what a guitar player does, this is how songwriting develops. And that's just wonderful. And when it comes to Taylor Swift, that sort of leads me to what I think is one of the other major musical stories of 2024, which is, I think we finally learned that no one gives a holy damn who a musician supports politically. It's not going to change an election. It's not going to change votes. You can have Bruce Springsteen get on stage and say, vote for this person. You can have Taylor Swift get on stage and say, please, vote for this person. You know what? It doesn't make a difference. And for a long time, we all thought it would make a difference. Do you remember, Mark, how excited people were, how excited the Democrats were when Taylor Swift came out for Kamala? Do you remember?
Oh, yeah. A lot of people were predicting it would be a huge game changer, right? Bringing the legions of women, right.
And it just wasn't. And a part of that, there are probably a lot of reasons for that. I think a part of that is today, the rock stars are MMA fighters. They're not the rock stars you and I grew up with. Today, the rock stars are those kind of personalities, the kind of personalities that Vince and Linda McMahon created. And I'm not putting that down, by the way. I'm just saying is that I think the Democrats had a very old school idea of what a rock star was, about who might sway opinions. I really thought, And I'm going to admit, I was very naive about this. I really thought that Bruce Springsteen and Taylor Swift, not to mention all the other, you know, Hollywood celebrities, coming out for the Democrats would make a difference. Turned out it didn't. And I think that punctures a myth that we've held on to for a lifetime.
You know, one of the things that I would say about Springsteen, because I follow him so closely and I've seen him, you know, close to 50 times in concert, people can take this for what it's worth. He has, over the years, gone out, obviously, and endorsed candidates, done rallies, things like that. But in those 50 concerts that I've seen, maybe there were two times where I've heard him ever on stage talk specifically about party politics. You know, in other words, about a Democrat or Republican.
Right.
There was a concert in Milwaukee that's rather legendary in the E Street world from election night in 1988. But anyway, the bottom line is he doesn't do that in concert. Like, and I don't think Taylor Swift really does either. So
no,
you're able as a fan to sort of separate that stuff. But I bring it up because it begs the question, why do it at all?
Yeah, I have to say, for better or worse, and I tend to be someone, I'm a great fan of protest music. I'm a great fan of the classic protest singers like Bob Dylan and Pete Seeger and Phil Oakes. I'm a great fan of these people. But at the end of the day, I'm all for activism, and I'm not just talking about Democratic activism. I'm talking about whatever activism. I'm all for musicians taking a stance, but I think we can stop pretending that it's going to sway elections. Maybe it can alert people to union issues. And I think Bruce Springsteen's been very big on that stuff.
Yeah.
It can alert people to union issues. It can alert people to local issues. But in terms of swaying on a national election, I think 2024, it punctured that bubble.
Did you have one more story, or did you cover three stories?
Yes, I did. Yes,
okay.
I did. I wanted to say that Bob Dylan's the fact that Bob Dylan is still out there playing the shows of his life, anyone who goes to see Bob Dylan is going to see the definition of a man with a rock and roll heart. Bob Dylan gets on stage, he plays for himself, he plays with the energy of an 18-year-old or a 16-year-old playing in their garage. He's a rock and roll heart, and he does it again and again and again. He's determined to die on that stage being true to the inner spirit of the god of rock and roll. And Bob Dylan's never-ending tour, which continued throughout 2024, I think that's, to me, one of the biggest stories of the year, is that he is still out there. And now, of course, we have the movie.
Yeah, the movie's coming out in a few days. A Complete Unknown with Timothy Chalamet. We have a St. Louis guy, Norbert Leo Butz, who is a friend who's also in that movie, is Bob Dylan's mentor. I haven't seen it. I'm going to watch it this weekend. So I'll have a report on Monday afternoon before Christmas.
I have I bought tickets for me and my family for Christmas Day. We're going to go see the movie. And I want to say this about the movie, and I think it's important. The movie was done very much with Bob Dylan's cooperation, and this is something you can never forget about Bob Dylan. He is a joker. He is a man obsessed, not obsessed, that's the wrong way to put it. He is a man who's created his own myth. The good thing about Bob Dylan is that when it comes to his own mythology, when it comes to telling his own story, he's not. You can't believe anything that comes out of his mouth. And I think that's going to be reflected in the movie. You may remember a few years ago, there was a terrific Martin Scorsese documentary done with Dylan about his touring in the 1970s. Do you remember that?
I do, but I never saw it.
It's a wonderful film, and it was all made up. The footage was real, the live footage, but the stories Bob Dylan told about the tour were entirely made up. Now, I expect that the movie, even though I've heard that it's very touching and very effective, is also going to be full of this gorgeous, almost Dada-like, if to use the word for the art movement, this Dada-like mythology where Bob Dylan just likes loves to make up stuff about his own life.
That's interesting.
So I watch out for that
yeah.
in a good way.
Curious. All right, so let's you asked, we were talking earlier via text, and one of the suggestions was coming up with a couple of albums of the year, and I did that, so I'm going to start on this, because there's
sure,
two
please,
that
yeah.
sort of...
Because mine are going to be so obscure, everyone's going to be bored to death.
Yours are obscure. We pulled a little music, but mine are probably obscure as well, to a certain extent, but there's a band that I love, and I actually got to see them about a month ago, and their name is Coin, and they just put out a new record. This is what they sound like here. This is called Strawberry Jam. And they're basically a three-piece. I mean, they have more.
Is that spelled with a K or a C?
No, it's C. Oh, it's all capital letters C-O-I-N. And I've been a fan of theirs for several years. And they've been around for, you know, probably a decade or more. But
that's,
I saw them.
Lovely.
Yeah, it's really good. Well, I play like the second half of this song too. It's like a lot of harmonica. It's just got a great sound to it. So that album outside of this song, Strawberry Jam, really, really, I loved. It was one of those records I could just put on. And then I'll kind of go in a little different direction for my second favorite here, and that's the Mavericks put out a new record this year. And I'm a big fan of the Mavericks, and this is one of the songs from that. I use this as a bump every once in a while. It's called Live Close. And really, really good sound here. I love Rahm Mallo so much.
I love you, baby. I like your company. You make me laugh.
Tim, have you ever seen the Mavericks in concert?
Yes, I have. Not for many years. But isn't that a beautiful example of the fact that artists, as they enter their 50s and enter their 60s, can still make powerful music? Artists aren't, it's not like the old days when artists would just get up there and play their oldies. Someone like the Mavericks can go into the studio and they can do something that has the heart and soul and energy and grit of the stuff they were doing in their 20s, and maybe even better than the stuff they were doing in their 20s.
I think
20s.
sometimes better. And I love the Mavericks because, and Sue and I talk about this a lot, they're really the type of band, like if I wanted to just take a random friend or someone that I wanted to really show them a great concert, a great live concert experience, they wouldn't even have to know the music. And I'd take them to a Mavericks show, and they would be blown away. They really would.
You have great taste. Seriously, that's a really, really good call.
So those are my two records there. What do you have for me that I've never heard of?
Speaking of artists who've been around for a long time yet are still at the top of their game, there is a phenomenal, one of my all-time favorite bands is an English band called Hawkwind. Hawkwind are a space rock band. In fact, they may be the inventor of space rock. It's been said that Hawkwind are the missing link between Pink Floyd and the Sex Pistols. And in England, they're kind of as big as the Grateful Dead, even though they don't sound anything like the Grateful Dead. They're kind of a hippie cult band, but also the punk rockers love them too. And they've been around for 55 years, and they put out an album this year called Stories from Time and Space, which was just, it was their best album in 40 years, and just shows that they still got it, that they're still investigating, inventing, and making beautiful space rock. This album, for you or for the people listening to the show, imagine a cross between Supertramp and Pink Floyd and the Cars or the Sex
Pistols. Wow. All right, you got my attention now. Yeah. I never heard of it. I do like the name of the band, Hawkwind, though. I like that. All right, you had one other here that I pulled.
1969.
Nice. What about this one here? Ethan pulled this, so I don't know if this is one of the songs that's a hit.
This is from the other album.
Yeah, this is from the other album. Want to talk about this one?
Yeah, you know, it's a great gift to make music that is not ambient, but that is delicate, but draws you in, that is intense. Not music that just sits in the background, but quiet, strange music that really engages you. There is a European duo called Mars Smith, made up of a flautist named Daniela Mars and a pianist named Paul Smith, and they did an absolutely, absolutely exotic and beautiful album this year called Faroe Islands, Echoes on the Wind. And I know that sounds like it's going to be a floaty experience, but it's a really deep, intense experience to listen to the piano and the flutes just drift you off across the seas, and it's really one of my favorite albums of the year.
I like the sound of this. I'm going to put that in my queue and title, which is the music service that I use, and I'm quite curious about that. I also, you know, one of the other things I asked you is I've been playing.
That's a reminder that I have to really spend more time with Tidal.
I love Tidal. I think it's great.
One of the things I predict for 2025 is going to be the fall of Spotify, but we'll talk about that another time.
Yeah, you sent me a piece. Let's do that because I do want to follow up on that. I was going to tell you, so there's a great song. I was going to get your opinion on this. So I'm doing Christmas music on Tuesday. They're allowing me to spin some Christmas tunes, and most of them are going to be artists that I either know personally or have some sort of connection to.
Is there anything like the bumpers you've been playing today? It's going to be a hell of a show.
Yeah, there's good, but some of the stuff that I play as bumpers has got a little bit more high energy. There's some of the songs I'll play on Tuesday that are a little bit more, a little slower, not maybe great bumper music. But there's an artist that came out right around 2000, and her name, early 2000s, her name is Lizzie West, and she wrote an original Christmas song called Family Christmas. I'll just a little sample here.
About three to shake the boxes by the tree. Wait as patiently.
Now, Tim, listening to her sing, this song's called Family Christmas. Do you think that vocal sounds like any other singer that you're familiar with, just out of curiosity?
In all honesty, no.
Okay, let me play. So she did a song, well, she did a record called Holy Road, and it was just a great record. It was on Warner Brothers. It was very, very, you know.
How long ago?
Like early, I'm thinking 2001, 2002. But this was one of the songs. But listen again, see if the lyric or the vocals sound familiar. So what happened was, is this album was fantastic, and I was told by Lizzie that at WXRT in Chicago, which is a legendary radio station,
sure
the guy said, we can't play this, it sounds too much like Natalie Merchant, which, I mean, how many bands sound like one another?
Very interesting.
But she does have kind of a Natalie Merchant sound, but I got to know her, and we became, you know, a little friends, and then she just vanished. I mean, I've never been able to find her since about 2007. The record is still up there. It's the only record that she ever put out. The song Family Christmas is still out on the streaming platforms, but man, she just vanished. I even texted a couple weeks ago to see if she would answer and got nothing back, but it was just weird. And I guess you got
you're
artists like
shout
that.
Outs to, you're doing giving shout-outs to your listeners to see if anyone knows anything?
Well, she's not from around here, but every once in a while, you know, that does happen. Now, look, I just looked at the clock, so unfortunately I ran out of time to talk any more music. My goodness, this goes by very quickly. But I do want to follow up after the first of the year when Sue's back, and we'll talk about some of the Spotify stuff. But have a great
Fantastic.
Christmas. And by the way, I mentioned this. I didn't get to play it, but your band, Hugo Largo, from the 80s was mentioned on this list from the New York Times in the best box sets of the year, right?
I know. What a pleasure. I mean, that was an unexpected pleasure. We made two albums in 1988 and 1989, and they finally have been re-released 35 years later in a box set. And imagine my surprise to find that the New York Times put them on the list, put the box set for Hugo Largo on the list of the best box sets of the year. That was a great, great surprise.
Congratulations. Have a great holiday, Tim Summer. We will talk soon after
too,
the first
thank
of the
you
year.
So much.
Ah, G Love and Special Sauce. It's been a while since I've seen that band. Used to see them all the time. Great vibe, if you're not familiar. We are going to have Sue back in the studio with us on Monday afternoon, which I'll be very happy for. It's been a lonely, lonely place here this week, but Ethan and Fred have kept me company. But we're going to kind of lighten the load a little bit next week. Kenny Wallace is going to join us, the legendary Kenny Wallace in the 3 o'clock hour. You know, Kenny, the goal there is he just spreads Christmas cheer. He really does. That's what he does. He spreads cheer year-round. So Kenny will be here. My dear friend, I love him so much, George Gray from The Price is Right, who's in to see his mother, Mama May, here from California, and he's going to play a little game that he came up with called The Price is Wrong, Mark. We'll do that in the 4 o'clock hour. Producer Emeritus David Klein came up with some awesome items for that, so I'm very excited. I didn't even cheat. Dave sent the list to me. I forwarded it to George. My buddy Chris Trevino, old journalism school friend, is going to join us at 5:07 to talk Mizzou basketball, hopefully after a bragging rights victory on Sunday. We'll talk about the bowl game and the rest of the college football playoff. Gervino is awesome. And then Johnny Holzem from the Well Hungarians. He's another dear friend. I'm basically favoring friends on Monday and Tuesday, including my friend Brian Kilmeade, who's going to be with us on Tuesday. Dan Buffel will talk some holiday movies in the 4 o'clock hour. And Neil Sausick, who is an outstanding singer-songwriter with the Mighty Pines, will also be with us. He's got a great concert coming up next week. And in the 5 o'clock hour, I'm going to play a little Christmas music. So that's how we will wrap up the shows for the year. Sue and Ethan will take you through the rest of the week. We're going to do some best of Mark Reardon shows and have some fun with that stuff as well. I think they're going to still do the Sue's News and everything along those lines. But we ought to do this.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Okay, this one runs a little longer than usual, only because we didn't air it earlier. They did reach a new spending deal. The House voted to approve it earlier. Here's the House Speaker Mike Johnson explaining everything.
Priority for us, this is America First legislation because it allows us to be set up to deliver for the American people. In January, we will make a sea change in Washington. President Trump will return to D.C. and to the White House. And we will have Republican control of the Senate and the House. Things are going to be very different around here. This was a necessary step to bridge the gap, to put us into that moment where we can put our fingerprints on the final decisions on spending for 2025. We also, in this bill, as you know, took care of Americans who desperately needed and deserved the assistance. We had a record hurricane season. Hurricanes Helene and Milton, in particular, did dramatic damage across at least six states, the Carolinas, the Virginia, from Florida, Tennessee, all the way through. And they have been waiting for the federal government to assist. We did that tonight in this bill. We also took care of our farmers, many of whom were on the brink of collapse because of Bidenomics, frankly, because the inflationary cost of their inputs and the inability they have right now to get loans from the banks and the lenders to put their crops in the ground, to put the seeds in the ground in the spring. So we had to take care of that, and we did. We are excited about this outcome tonight. We're grateful that everyone stood together to do the right thing. And having gotten this done now as the last order of business for the year, we are set up for a big and important new start in January. We can't wait to get to that point. We encourage swift passage in the Senate now. They need to do their job, as the House just did. We will all go home. I want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Holidays, and a Happy New Year, because I hope not to see you until we get back after that. I was in constant contact with President Trump throughout this process. Spoke with him most recently about 45 minutes ago. He knew exactly what we were doing and why, and this is a good outcome for the country. I think he certainly is happy about this outcome as well. Elon Musk and I talked within about an hour ago. And we talked about the extraordinary challenges of this job. And I said, hey, you want to be Speaker of the House? I don't know. He said, this may be the hardest job in the world. I think it is. But we're going to get through this. We are going to unify this country, and we are going to bring the America First agenda to the people beginning in January. We cannot wait to get started. I hope you all have a great holiday.
All right, there you go, Mike Johnson. That's your audio cut of the day. We'll talk more about this on Monday. Have a great weekend. I'm just going to say this, even though I'm a Mizzou guy, no offense to the Irish. Go Hoosiers!
Get more at 971talk.com.